You know, our steps are ordered by the Lord, every single one of them. The highs and the lows, the good and the bad, the happy and the sad, they're all ordered by the Lord. And sometimes things don't always go as planned. And for the last 2 days, I have not been able to have a shower, unfortunately, because the well's having a little bit of trouble keeping up with all the people staying in the Robinette's home. And the rest of our group wasn't able, including Nancy and her husband, wasn't able to have a shower yesterday because, you know, the water clunked out before anybody got in. Well, Mr. Robinette, Larry, got everything going again. So everybody, you know, tried to get baths last night and everything. Well, Dee and I decided we would wait till today because we didn't want to overstress the well. And Michael went in to the bathroom last night, turned on the water faucet, and he said, the water's out again. And I'm like, okay, all right. And I went in and I thought, Lord, I ask you that, do you have enough water to get a bath and wash your hair? Because, well, Dee's Dee. She's beautiful Deborah, and she's my what I call the Greek goddess. Not that I don't have my own beauty. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm just saying, Dee's Dee. And I know when you don't feel your best, it's hard to put your best forward sometimes. You know what I'm saying? And Michael and I, the first 2 years of our married life, you have no idea where we have come from. We lived in a house with walls that breathed. We had no indoor plumbing for 2 years. The toilet was a 5-gallon bucket. There was no heat when you went to the bathroom. We played cards at night, and whoever lost was the person who had to go in the unheated bedroom and do the angel thing in the bed to heat it up, and then the other person would come and jump in, and, you know. We had plastic on the walls and rats that and mice that would try to, you know, run through. One night, I heard what I thought was a rat because it sounded so loud. Our bed was in the living room, nearer to the heat source, which was in the kitchen, but we had a huge quilt separating the two rooms because we were, see, this man, he gave up a really good paying job on a road crew because he started dating me and he done made up his mind he was marrying me. So he gave up his job to come back home to be with me without ever having asked me to marry him. But when he left that day to come home, his brother looked at him and he said, you're not at work. And he was like, no. And his brother said, you're going home to get married, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. And I was oblivious to all of this. And I want you to know this man has never asked me to marry him. He's never asked me to marry him. But he took me to get in, and he took me to how it came about was, we went to church one night, he got out of the truck. Before he got out of the truck, he looked at me and he said, I think I'm falling in love with you. He got out of the truck, and he turned around, he said, no. And I'm like, oh, you know. He said, I have fallen in love with you. And then the next time he took me out, he took me into a jewelry store, and he said, pick out an engagement ring, whatever you want. So I'm really frugal, you know. So I'm looking at all the engagement rings. Back then, they just kind of had them sized from your biggest right on down. And I'm looking, and the lady's showing all these up here on this end, and I'm looking at prices, and I'm going, no. No, no. And part of the thing was I didn't want any big gawky diamond on my finger. I'm not that type of a person. You know, it's beautiful on other people, but it's not me. And I finally got down to this one, and there was one just a little bit smaller, and I was looking at this one that I, you know, and I'm like, yeah. But I would like that. He said, no. He says, you're going to make me look bad enough as it is. He says, you're not going to the smallest diamond they have. So anyhow, he purchased my diamond engagement ring, and he said, you're not wearing it yet. The next time we went to church, it was I believe it was a Wednesday night, and we went in and sat down. During the service, he reaches into his pocket, and he pulls out a Kleenex with something wrapped in it, and he opens it up, and he gives me the ring, and he takes my hand, and he says, I met you in church, and I'm going to get engaged to you in church. And I'm telling you right now, you'll always be number two, second only unto our Lord. we dated 7 months and was married. And we had 3/4 of the world saying it was wrong for us to do it because religion said that a divorced person couldn't remarry, and my husband was divorced. And plus, there were 7 years between us. I was 18. He was 25. But God. Because the night before I got married, my daddy called me. I had to leave home. I was not living with Michael. I ended up at his sister's house. She kept me for 2 weeks. The night before we were to get married, my daddy called me up and he said, "If you marry this man, you are dead to me. You no longer exist. You are not my daughter." And I got off the phone and I got down on my knees and I said, "Lord, I love this man with all my heart. But if it's really wrong for me to marry him, I love you more. And I will leave this man and never have anything to do with him because my love for you is greater than my love for him." And the presence of God, the peace of God enveloped that room and enveloped me like nothing I have ever experienced to this day. And I didn't hear the voice of God say anything, but I knew it was going to be all right. And that next morning, nobody would come and support us. Our pastor wanted nothing to do with us because both of our families attended a church, and it divided the church. And everybody was afraid of my dad, so nobody was going to come. And my dad, understand, my dad's a good man. My dad is not a mean man, not a good man. He sincerely loved the Lord with all his heart. But he believed that he knew what was best in all situations, and he wasn't willing to be taught. Okay? And my mom showed up a week later, and she said, "Sabie, I can't live like this. We've got to get this worked out. Will you come to have Christmas with us?" We were married on the 12th of December, spent Christmas with my parents on the 25th, and my husband, for about the next 18, 19, 20 years, ended up having to face hell every time he went to my parents' home, simply because my daddy was a good man who loved the Lord with all his heart, but he wasn't willing to be taught. Are you hearing this? Because you all are leaders here. We have to be willing to be taught. We can't reach a place where we say, "Oh, I know it now. Look at me." You know, every one of us, even Nancy, you know, is willing to be taught. We all have to be willing to be taught because we're progressively becoming who God created us to be. Anyhow, let me get back to the not having a shower deal. Now, I don't stink because I know how to live without water. And this morning, I was so grateful when I saw Dee's wet hair. She said, "Oh, we ran out of water. I was only able to, you know," so I knew she got a little bit of her, you know, what she needed to get done. Everybody else was nice and spiffy clean. And I said, "Thank you, God. I am so grateful that if anybody had to go 2 days without a shower, it was me and none of them." And I tell you that because what we're going to talk about today goes beyond titles, goes beyond ministry, goes beyond positions, goes beyond anything that you do in life. And it comes to the core of who God created you to be. And I'm talking out of the core of my existence in Christ. I'm talking out of the nature of God that he put within me when he created me in my mother's womb. Okay? This is the nature I'm talking out of today. And because of that, if anybody's going to go without, it's going to be me. If anybody's going to have the hard way, it's going to be me. If anybody's going to be overlooked, it's going to be me. If anybody's going to be put down, it's going to be me. If anybody has to humble themselves and say they're wrong, even when they are the victim, it's going to be me. Not because I'm so great and wonderful, but that's the greatness and wonderfulness of our Father who lives within me. And that's how he expresses his nature, that part of his nature, through me. Okay? Now, he expresses other parts of his nature through each one of you. And some of you may be similar to me in the core of God that lives within you. Similar but not identical, because we are all unique. Not one of us is identically the same. And we see this evidence. See, God, you know, the physicality of God, what he has done in the physical realm, everything that he has created, everything, he gave man the knowledge and the ability so that God himself would have parables to share with us to explain his plan of existence to us, our plan of his existence where he wants us to live and where we will forever be with him in glory. You see? So none of this is by chance or accident. Everything in this physical world, God is put here, and somebody along the line somehow sees God existing in that. And he evidenced that in his word when he says that even creation declares that he exists. You know, so everything that's created, you know, I was looking at some of the pictures that Nancy had up of the pottery and all, and I was just thinking about that, and God just illuminated that to me. He said, you know, don't you realize everything I've created for my use. And I use everything that I've created. There's nothing created that I waste. Everything that I've created can be used to explain me, to show me, to reveal me. There's nothing, nothing, nothing that I haven't created that I don't use for my glory and for your good. And that includes you and me. See, there are no accidents. I don't care how you came into this world. See, my daddy came into this world in an undue situation. My daddy was the result of a woman who worked for a family. My great-grandfather was an oil man who lost everything in the oil industry because he had a partner who died. And then my grandfather found out that his partner, who he trusted, had been using the company's name and equity to back his loans. And when he died, it bankrupted my great-grandfather. My great-grandfather shortly thereafter had a stroke, and it rendered him even unable to work. And my great-grandmother, who was 20 years younger than my great-grandfather, ended up having 6 children and a husband who was incapacitated. And she moved into town, and she became a washerwoman for 50 cents a day. And she washed clothes, she cleaned floors, and she began to be a midwife to the local doctor. Great testimony, great heritage that I have. But my daddy, his mama was the hired servant in the house. Because my great-grandmother also, in her wisdom, she's a very smart woman. She had a huge house, and as her children grew up, there was road construction crews coming through, and she started renting out her rooms and running a boarding house. Okay? And my grandmother was the hired servant to help take care of my great-grandfather and help cook food for the boarders that came through. My grandmother had a daughter, 13, Edna. And Edna had some kind of an illness. Nobody knew, you know, to say what it was. She would have seizures and things. We're not sure what she had. But she was a little girl who loved Jesus. As a matter of fact, my great-grandfather said, if ever there was an angel, Edna is an angel, you know. But anyhow, that was back before we had welfare. That was back before. That was before all of this, before you could get any help, you know. You made it on your own, you know. And so Edna was sick, and my grandmother needed to get her some medicine, and she didn't have money. And my grandfather, being the man that he was, and he wasn't a bad man, he was just a man who was led by his carnal lusts, and he was a very proud man. And he told my grandmother, he said, Lucy, he said, if you'll let me have my way with you, I'll buy your daughter's medicine. So my grandmother slept with my grandfather to buy medicine for her daughter. And it didn't last very long, but she ended up pregnant. And my dad was the hidden child who grew up in a household of many as the bastard illegitimate child, and people made fun of him and put him down. And at the age of 5, he went to his grandmother and he said, Grandma, why don't I have a daddy? And she said, Son, I'm going to tell you a secret, and you can never tell anybody because it would hurt too many people. And she told him that his uncle was actually his father. And for years, my daddy lived with that. And when he came to Christ, finally he had a daddy who loved him and accepted him. And my daddy is an extremely anointed man. He is sincere as the day is long. If I want any person to pray for me, I have my daddy pray for me. But my daddy is not willing to be taught, especially by a woman. See what I'm saying? And my daddy has a mindset of how things should be. and he can't shift out of that paradigm. But he's a good man who loves the Lord with all his heart. With all his heart, okay? But at the age of 12, my uncle came out to me and he said, "Sabi, I have something to tell you. I'm your grandpa." And on that day, I met my grandfather for the first time. Known him all my life as my uncle. And he said one thing to me. He said, "Sabi," he said, "always be a good girl." And that's all the contact my grandfather ever had with me. So this is what my daddy was raised in. But this is part of my heritage that has made me the woman I am today. But I know what it is to be rejected. I know what it is to be an outcast. I know what it is to be forgotten. I know how wounded a person can be by life circumstances because I saw it in my daddy. And then because of his woundedness, I had to walk in some of that woundedness. But see, God ordained my steps to walk through that because that's part of what fed his nature within me and caused it to come to the surface. Because now I go for the outcast. I go for the downtrodden. I can look at you and I can tell if you're pulling back. I can look at you and I can see if you fell less than. I can look at you and I can see if you've dealt with rejection. I see it. And I go for you because nobody's going to hurt like I hurt. Nobody's going to go through the outcast that I went through. Nobody's going to be put down and live like that like I had to. Why? Because that sparked the nature of God within me, and that's the way our Father is. So everything you have ever went through, all of the hell, all of the junk, all of the garbage, all of the sickness, all of the diseases, all of the relational difficulties, all of the financial difficulties, everything of your life, God allowed to happen for his glory and for your good. Because God doesn't do accidents. You are not an accident. God didn't leave you at some point in your life and go, "Well, you know, you've sinned too much." Oh, the devil lies. That's all he does is lie. You are not in your circumstance because of sin. Your sins were forgiven on the cross of Calvary over 2,000 years ago. He forgave you in advance for everything you would ever do. All you have to do is receive it. Confess your sin and receive his cleansing blood to forgive you. So right now, I want to wipe that off of you. Some of you may be sitting here going, "Well, daggone, it's my fault. I left the Lord for 4 years. I did this terrible thing. I sinned. I slept with another man. I stole money at the job." No! You are going through affliction for the glory of God. But God, don't see, even in that, Satan will try to twist that because Satan will say, "Well, if you're not being afflicted, then you're not in the will of God." That's a lie too. God does not want us to go through affliction, but he will step back and allow a process that will create in us a release of his character through us to help a lost and dying world that is going through hell. And then what he does is he lifts us up. People, Michael's sister came down just a few days before we left, and my husband, he spoke to her about words coming out of her mouth because she's bad about cursing herself. She took care of his parents for several years, and she has said that she's losing her mind. She can't remember things. She's bad about declaring that. And he finally said to her, he said, "Sis, I've got to tell you this. And I hope it doesn't make you angry, but you've got to watch what you're saying. You're cursing yourself, you know?" And he said, "Sabe and I's life is like it is because we've learned to watch our words and we've learned to put our words in line with our Father." And he said, "You can see how blessed we are." She said, "Yes, we've seen it. We've watched what's happened to you." Now, we didn't know we were being watched. I mean, really, no. But we are a testimony. We, who they kicked out of the church and said, "Go, you're troublemakers." Because why? We got hold of the truth that wasn't being taught from the pulpit. And all we did was begin to pray. We didn't go to people and go, "Oh," we never once. You know who went to the people and went, "Oh," it was the very deacons that we were trusting. And we forgive them. They just didn't know. We've been in that boat before too. But it was for good. Because just like in the New Testament church, it was the persecution that sent the seed forth. The winds of adversity sent the seed forth to spread the gospel of truth. And that launched Michael and I out into a situation where we come in contact with the Wolf Clan. And they healed things in us, and we healed things in her, or in them. We called some of them forth, and they called us back. Because it's what every joint supplies. You nor I can walk this walk alone. We need each other. You take your finger off and lay it over there and see how long it exists. Now, the body will live without the finger, but the finger will not live without the body. It's what every joint supplies. You're unique. Your supply, that's why these workshops are so different and varied. Presentation style, what's emphasized is all different because it's a different facet of the nature of God coming out of each and every one of us. He's so big, he can't fit his entire nature in all of its greatness inside one individual. It takes an entire body of individuals. And we are, what we are to do is let the light that is within us shine. And the light within us is that facet of God that we receive and comes alive through Jesus Christ in us. And understand? So anyhow, I haven't had a shower for 2 days. And God said to me this morning, I was in there and I was thanking him that Dee got at least got a chance to, and I was grateful. And he said, I have water that you know not of. And you know what I said? I mimicked him. I said, I have water that you know not of. And you know what? I have water that you know not of. I'm a hope well. And you are hope wells. And your well is connected to the river of the living God. It is an eternal well that never shall run dry all the days of your life. You will never reach a point, Ida, where you don't have a flow from your hope well to give to people around you. I don't care how old you get. I don't care if you lose some of your faculties, your ability to see or speak, or you will still, the nature that is within you, the core of your existence, that which you truly believe, that passion of God within you will flow out of you. My grandmother on my mother's side, she had Alzheimer's. And my grandmother on my mother's side loved the Lord. She wasn't a strong Bible quoting, you know. She was a little handmaiden, very hidden, who had a daughter from a very early age that had a terrible disease that rendered her totally bedridden for many, 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 many years of her life. And that child is what caused the divorce from her husband because he wasn't going to deal with that situation. And my grandmother had a boyfriend, but she chose her daughter over the boyfriend, and she ended up living out her days alone, taking care of his daughter, and she ended up with Alzheimer's. In the nursing home, she was placed in the room with another lady who was a very well-known Christian woman in the community who taught Sunday school for kids for years and years and years and years and years and years and years. Now, my little grandmother, all she did was pray and sing. She'd go around to the gospel sings and sing with her two sisters who abused her, who took advantage of her, who stole from her, who misused her. But every night she'd hit her knees, she'd say the Lord's Prayer, and then she'd begin to pray. But here she is laying in the nursing home. And we were told that with Alzheimer's, people's personalities will totally change. And my mother had said, well, my mom is very sweet, mild-mannered, even-tempered, you know. And the doctor said, she's going to be hateful. She's going to be mean. She'll curse you. She'll spit on you. She'll kick at you. She'll resist you. And I was like, oh. My grandmother was in the nursing home for several years because my mother, who is in a wheelchair, tried to take care of her in her home. And finally, when my grandma about burned the house down, that's when my mom said, I can't do this anymore. And she had to have her put in a nursing home. In this room, my grandma was the sweetest person all the days of her life. Alzheimer's? Mm-hmm. Wait. And it's in there and it comes out. Hateful, mean, cantankerous? No, my grandmother didn't. To the point that when my grandmother died, the nurses from the nursing home all showed up at the funeral and they honored her. They wept when she passed. And you have to understand, my grandmother in the very end was so frail you could see her bones. And she spent her last several months in a fetal position. And she wore diapers for a long time. But she was the sweetest, kindest person there was. In the other bed, the other lady who loved the Lord, she was a Christian, she was genuine, she was real, she loved the Lord. She had Alzheimer's. She got mean, she got hateful, she cursed God, she cursed people. And there was a preacher that was visiting one day who knew both women, because he had went to the church that the other lady had went to as a little boy and whatever. And he made a comment to my mom. He said, the truth of what's in us will eventually come out of us when our guard is let down. Did that mean that one woman was better than the other in God's eyes? No, God loved them both equally. They both loved the Lord. But my grandmother was teachable. And the report of this other woman was, it had to be her way or no way. So do you understand my point about being teachable? Now I'm going to tell you something else. The truth of what's in you is going to come out when your guard is down. The truth of what's in you and I comes out when the pressure gets put on. When life goes to pot and all hell is coming against you. When things don't go our way. That's when the truth of what's in it comes out. And this morning, even as the water wouldn't come out of the spigot. See, this was good, Nancy. This is God allowed this for a reason. Yes, the flesh side is saved, started to say, well, golly, I'm the one speaking today, and I got to go to church, and I don't even get to have a shower. Everybody else is all nice and clean. Now, it's tried. Understand what I'm saying? It tried to. But it barely raised its ugly head, and I said, God, I thank you that Dee's clean, and I thank you that everybody else got clean, because, God, I can bear this. I can bear it a whole lot better than they can. And I felt that in the depth of my being. But that's because I know who I am in here. I know the part of my nature that is in me. Dee, will you pass out those leaflets right there, please? That's what I want to share with you all today. I know every one of you here is in various forms of ministry. I know that God uses you greatly, mightily, whether it be in prayer and preaching and prophesying and laying on of hands, you know, teaching, deliverance. You know, I realize that. But you have to understand that I was an ordained woman of God. I had did state meetings for teenagers. I have did every office. I've held every office in the church there is to hold. I've did everything there is to do. I was being groomed to take over the national women's group in the state of West Virginia in our denomination when I was younger. I was offered a church to pastor and had the sense enough to know that that wasn't where I was supposed to be. I want you to understand that. But back in 2009, with all of that pedigree, back in 2009, my good friend, Kelly, felt a leading of the Lord to bring a woman in by the name of Robin Chaddick. And Robin Chaddick is a professional life coach. And she's also a Christian. And she had written a book that was entitled Discovering Your Divine Assignment. And Kelly at the time, he was not my pastor at the time, but he is my pastor now. That's Beth's husband. He paid out of his pocket to fly this woman in, to put her up in his home, and to host this huge meeting and invited everybody he could invite that he could pack into his house to come to this meeting to discover your divine assignment. And he had four people show up. Himself, his wife, his sister-in-law, and me. Now, my husband was working, and I'm sure if he hadn't been working, he probably would have come because Kelly was his best bud. But there we were. Now, I want you to understand, and I haven't shared this with Beth. She can pass this on to Kelly. I went simply because Kelly was my good friend, and I wanted to support him. But I knew I wouldn't get anything out of this because I already knew who I was. I was content in the knowing of who I was. I wasn't proud. I just knew who I was. I already knew. I took all these tests before and did all this stuff. I knew who I was. I had a divine appointment with the Most High God through Robin Chaddick that liberated me and set me free from false beliefs that cleared out a lot of false mindsets that challenged me, that brought me to my knees to the point that the last day of the meeting, God led me to go around and wash people's feet and prophesy over those that were there. And that was a stretch for me. But I obeyed. And as our pastor is fond of saying now, from 2009, us girls were meeting in a prayer group. God had led Beth to start this prayer group for her family. And God had brought me into the group with them. And we were praying for members of our family, whatever. But still, we'd reached this point. And then Kelly brings in Robin Chaddick. Us three girls and Pastor Kelly have went astronomically through the roof in the way that God has used us after we took that weekend class. Now, Pastor Kelly went to Bible college. He's an ordained man of God. I mean, he's had great exploits that he has done. D used abundantly back in Iowa, you know. Great woman of God. Beth used abundantly, even in her profession, reaching out to people, causing change to happen in her family, shaking things up. But from this point on, whew, it was that same year, 2009, that we really latched on to Point of Hope. And shortly thereafter that, God had already led Pastor Kelly to start having services at their home shortly thereafter, around that time frame. So Pastor Kelly launches a church. Beth goes into counseling from being just a math teacher. Dee begins to recognize the Deborah anointing, I'll call it that, that's in her. And begin to believe. Because see, you understand about Dee. Dee has been a mighty woman of God she shared it in her book since the age of 14. God began to show her dreams and all that. But men and jealous women shut her down. Religion shut her down. She went through abuse, physical abuse, because of the anointing that was in her. And God used a little woman by the name of Robin Chaddick, who, when she came in, and saw us four. She didn't get all shook up and go, oh my gosh, I can't believe I flew all these miles. I went through all this just to come for four people. She was a lot like Nancy. She said, that's fine. Who's here is who's supposed to be here. And she prophesied over us at the end, and she said, I expect great things. God's about to do great things in this area through you four. God's about to do great things. And that has been true. But it came because we found out the core of the God who is in us. Okay, open your sheets. Everybody got a sheet? Go to, I should have numbered the pages, but I wasn't thinking that far ahead when I was doing this. And if you would saw how I put this together, I'm not real computer savvy, so I do things old school. I clip art things and by hand, you know, with paper and scissors and whiteout and three trials of whatever works. Go to the last page. It's the last page. Now I want you to understand something. Beth and Dee and I are unique, but we're no more unique than you all. There's nothing any more special about us than what's special about you. Okay? So this is one of those things, you know, it's just like this. You look and you see this woman who was 50 pounds overweight, and she loses a bunch of weight, and you go, oh. And you're just like, oh, I want to do that. How did you do that? And she begins to tell you, and you're like, as you crawl back in your bag of potato chips, yeah, that's good, but, yeah, it's too much work. Now, this is going to require some work on your part because we don't have the time for me to take you through this worksheet process till you get to your divine assignment, but I'm going to show you how to do it, and then this much I'm going to say. If you truly want to know the greatness of God within you, find out your divine assignment by doing these worksheets. It'll take you maybe about an hour, and you're going to have to do some archaeological digging inside yourself. But there's a scripture that Paul said in Galatians 6 and 1, make a careful exploration of who you are and the work you have been given to do. And then sink yourself into that. And that's exactly what happened to Beth and Dee and I and Kelly. We made a careful exploration that weekend of who we are and the work that we had been given to do. And now we sunk ourselves into that. Because you know what? It's real easy for me to say no now to things that I used to feel like, oh, I better do that. Because I know who I am. If you look on the paper there, you will see the divine assignment. Your divine assignment is a two-word phrase. The first word is your central, let me see here. Your first word is your greatest strength. And my greatest strength is encourage. I encourage people. I'm an encourager. Carol, have I encouraged you any since you've known me?
Oh, yeah.
Just a little bit, because that's what I do. I'm an encourager. Okay, that's my passion. Because the Lord told me many, many years ago, he said, daughter, you've not had the blessing. You've not been given the blessing. People have not blessed you. But I'm going to give you the ability to bless those that you love, to bless those that you care for, to bless those of your family. Well, y'all are my family. I love you and I care for you. So it's easy for me to bless you through encouragement. And that's how we bless one another. You know, Nancy's been talking a lot about bless one another, bless one another, bless one another. And we say words of blessing, and that has its place. But faith without works is? You ever heard the phrase, put your money where your mouth is? How many in here want to go deeper with God? How many in here want to see yourself being used by God every single day? This is the key that will launch you there. Remember, Debbie Andrews has been talking about keys. Okay? All right? The first word is your greatest strength. The second word is your central passion. So my greatest strength, go to the second from the last page. It's got my picture on it. You're going to have a list. The first thing, well, let me do this. I'm flying by the seat of my pants here, so. go to the page that looks like this. It says chapter 5. Let me start you there. I know this stuff, and I have to be careful that I don't assume that you know what you don't know about this. Chapter 5. In this, you're going to do a personal archaeological dig. You're going to go down through there, and you're going to answer questions. And you have to be honest about yourself. And let me tell you what happens to us Christians when somebody says, be honest with yourself. We immediately start listing our faults, don't we? Now, if somebody says to you, now you be honest, immediately you go, yeah, you're right. I did tell that lie yesterday. Yeah, you're right. I did eat that bag of potato chips when I was supposed to be fasting. Yeah, you're right. I did. You know what I'm saying? That's the devil. When God looks at us, he doesn't see anything wrong with us. What's so difficult about that? He doesn't see anything wrong with us. He doesn't look at us and go, oh, man, Beth, you've just really screwed things up. Bad daughter. What am I doing? You know what he does? He's a father. He picks us up when we fall in the mud. And how many of you have ever had kids that purposely fell in the mud so they could wallow in it? We had a daughter like that. Have a daughter like that when she was little. And you know what? It's so daggone cute when they're immature and don't know what they're doing, and they do it. It's really cute. So what do? You pick him up, and you might just go, oh, I can't believe you did that. And you're giggling all the time because it's so horrendously cute. And you take him and you clean him up, and you dress him up. And we always dressed our children when we had control over them. You hear that? We dressed our children when we had control over them, over their choices, the way we wanted them to look because they represented us. Did anybody hear the parable there? When God has control over us, he will dress us in a way that represents him when he has control over us, okay? But you have to be honest with yourself when you do this. And honest, I mean honest. Look at what God has done. View yourself as, step outside of yourself and view yourself truly the way you are. The way God sees you. Your strengths. How many of you sitting in here can honestly say, I have some strengths? How many of you sitting in here can say, I have some things that I'm pretty daggone good at? Now see, this is where we have to separate the truth from the lie, because then the enemy goes, oh, you're puffing yourself up. No, you're not. We are masterpieces. And all the masterpiece does is says, look what God has done. I want you to look at me and go, wow. Because when you look at me and go, wow, you see the greatness of a God who brought me up from nothing and turned me into a mighty woman who's now traveling all over the place, sharing hope and good news. Not anything that I have done, but it's all what he has done. And he's doing the same thing with each and every one of you in your sphere of influence. But you're going to do this personal archaeological dig. Question 3. I don't want you to write any answers right now. I'm just taking you through it. Life is most exciting when? Life is most exciting when? I'll tell you when life is most exciting for me, above everything and anything, is when I sit down and I start talking to one person and I start pouring out the love and the encouragement. When I see the hopelessness, when I see them down on themselves, when I see them just ready to give up and quit, when I see them think they're absolutely nothing, and I begin to tell them who they are, because God has given me eyes to see the potential in people. Oh, they might be a drug addict. They might be a prostitute. They might have a religious spirit attached to them. They might be all this, but I don't focus on that. I focus on the God in them who's going to come forth, because I'm speaking water of life to them, because I'm a hope well, and I have a source that flows from the very throne of God, and it's watering the seed. Every time I speak to the God within you, the seed of God that's within you is being watered by the water of the Most High God, the living Christ, and he's causing things to blossom in you that you didn't even know existed. And you know what the great part of our daddy is? Pipes get coated. He told me one time, he said, you're a pipeline
to many, and many pieces to the pipe are continually being added. But he said, don't despair, because the pipeline gets coated with the same thing it gives out. Are you having a bad day? You're getting hit by Satan? Then go do your divine assignment. And I guarantee you, the real you will rise up. The Lion of Judah within you will rise up big and strong. And the enemy will have to flee. People have got this messed up. We think we've got to pray and fast and prophesy and speak the word. And we have to do all those things. Those all have their place. But all we have to do to minister in our divine assignment is just be ourselves. Just be yourself. Okay? Let the God within you, the facet of his character, of his personality, flow out of you. So you're going to do this archaeological dig. Go to the next page. You'll see questions 5, 6, 7. Question 5. What have you suspected about yourself all along that might now be coming to the surface? Some of us have heard the voice of God, not recognize it as the voice of God, thinking that it's Satan trying to get us over in pride. When we hear ourselves or hear the words come across our minds of greatness. You know, my pastor, not current pastor, but my spiritual father many, many years ago, he said, his leadership down, he said, I want you to write me a letter. I want you to tell me everything you know about yourself. And he said, I want you to focus on the right, not the wrong. And that was liberating. He did that a couple different times, and that was liberating. Because he said, I just want you to make some I am statements. And that was liberating as I made my list. And it was a long list. You know? And I thought, wow. And then one other time, my spiritual father, Ron Williams, he's gone to be with the Lord now, he said to me, he said, God says begin to dream again. What are the dreams that he's given you that you have let go of? And I had two. And the most important of the dream was, Lord, I'm great in your kingdom. Lord, I'm a great one in your kingdom. I'm going to touch many lives for you, Christ. And that was hard for me to say because I felt so unworthy. It was at a very difficult time in my life. And I felt so unworthy and so worthless. And my circumstances pretty well echoed that. I'm pretty great, aren't I? God doesn't lie when he gives a word, does he? And that's not me bragging on me. That's me bragging on the fact that when your father gives you a word of promise, you hold on to it, Lorraine, because he's coming. 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 At a time you might not even think, but he's coming. Our daughter's getting married at the age of 30 for the first time. She's never lived with a guy. She's kept herself sexually pure. And I say that to her praise and her honor and her glory, you know. And she would always tell a guy when she went out with him the first time, if they decided to go on a second date, before they went on the second date, she'd say, look, I'm going to tell you this much. I don't sleep around. I'm saving myself for my husband. So if that's in your mind, we'll not just take this second date. And you know what? Most of them went the other way. But she saved herself. And about, I don't know, 3.5, 4 years ago, a relationship she was in about 15 months, and they were beginning to talk marriage, and Michael and I knew this was not the one, but you can't go up to your child and say he's not the one, because what are they going to do? They're going to try to prove you wrong, you know? Anyhow, she had it with men, and she told God, she said, God, if there's a husband out there for me, you know I want to be married, but Lord, if he's out there, he's going to have to come to me, because I'm done looking. And she didn't date all this time. Didn't date. And on December the 13th of 2014, a young man walked into the barn where she works on the side. And he walked in with a purpose because his mother had told him about a girl, Colette Polly, that she thought he should go meet. And my daughter knew nothing of it. Our daughter knew nothing of it. He's the son-in-law that Beth and I and Michael have prayed for about 6 years now. Because when God gives a word, the first relationship she ever had as a young woman, she went back to him 3 times, trying to make it work. Didn't work. And the pastor at the time that we had, his wife, sent her a bouquet of flowers at work and had a little card and says, God heals the broken road. And she said, you start listening to that song. So that's been our daughter's theme song for many years. I'm talking about early 20s. God heals the broken road. It's from the song Bless the Broken Road. And I'll tell you what, my daughter didn't always believe. Our daughter didn't always believe. But I tell her, I would prophesy to her when she was down, and I would say, because I encourage by caring. I don't just encourage by caring when I'm in here. I encourage by caring. Sometimes my husband gets a little upset with me because he just wants to vent about the problems at the work. He doesn't particularly want me to encourage him, but it's so much a part of me, I can't hardly stop myself. Because that's God in me. And God's a problem solver. So don't tell God your junk if you don't want it fixed, because he fixes things. He don't just fix them. He creates them better than new. He gives you an upgrade. Okay? But I told her, I said, honey, the day's going to come when just before you walk down the aisle with your daddy, I'm going to walk up behind you and go, due season, daughter, due season. Because I would tell her, I said, honey, he'll come in due season. The man will come in due season. And she'd go, oh, mother, mother, mother. Because she didn't believe. But I believed for her. And I declared it because that's the nature of God within me, to declare the truth. And the truth that I know is that God works everything out, because I'm a hope well. And I have a source that flows from the throne of the living God into me that is continual, full of hope. Because he sees the end from the beginning. And he knows how it all works out. And he knows it works out well for his children. Are you a child of God? Okay. Then you'll go down, number seven. what you're doing is in these is you're finding out a little bit about you, who you really are inside. Question 8 goes over into the next page, and you see the alphabet listed A to Z. And you are to write down positive words that describe you, because you're doing an archaeological dig. An archaeological dig. Now, don't do those just yet. I want you to have your quiet time with God at some point. You're going to have homework from this class. Then you go to question 9. What do you feel is the world's deepest need? What do you feel is your greatest happiness? The world's deepest need is they need to know that somebody cares. And what is my greatest happiness? When I see a hurting person light up and know they're loved. Because my divine assignment is encouraged by caring. See? So this will excavate into you the things that are planted deep within you by God himself. Then you'll go to chapter 6 there. Why on earth are we here? And you will take the next 2 questions on the following page. And you will reassess what you learned during the archaeological dig, and you'll write those answers there. Then you'll go down to the bottom of the page where it says Central Passion List. Now, hold your finger there and go back over to the page where you see my picture by itself. And I'm going to show you what mine looked like so you have an idea what's going on there. What you do is you go down through those lists of words under Central Passion, and you begin to circle any word that stands out to you that's just dings your dinger inside, so to speak. Now, you're going to be really raw with the knowledge of you because you just went through the archaeological dig. So it's going to be fresh and new. So I'd advise you not to put it aside. I'd advise you to do this all at one setting. And then you're going to begin to circle everything that pertains to you. And if you run across one and it you know it's not you, just put a line through it. So that immediately, you know, takes that one out. And what you're going to have is you're going to have a series of words left. Now, if you have them all circled, well, hey, that's great. You're still going to narrow it down to one. But that's fine, because every word that's there is a part of who you are. Okay? And you're going to, out of that list that you have, I have caring, joy, peace, and self-worth. That's what stood out to me. Caring, joy, peace, and self-worth. Now, anybody who knows me, is that kind of descriptive of what you would say I carry? Or what's a part of me? I give people back their self-worth. I'm a joyful person. I'm a person that when you're around me, the Spirit of the Lord produces peace. You girls who know me, you think that's a fairly, okay. So, but I had to narrow it down to three. So I looked through those four words and I went, okay, what three stand out of the four? And I wrote caring, joy, and self-worth. And then there's a series of questions above those three boxes that say, narrow your list down to three. Number one, if I could talk about nothing else for the rest of my life, what would I want to talk about? Caring. Loving people, caring people, building people up, making people feel good at my expense, if that's what it takes. I've been around people that have problems with, they're very insecure, so therefore they have a self-righteous spirit that's attached to them because they really don't believe they have any worth. So they're open prey for a self-righteous spirit which attaches itself to them so that they feel important because they don't believe they're worth anything inside. And I recognize that. God's given me discernment on that, and I recognize that. So what do? I get up beside of them, and I get real low. Man, you are awesome. You are awesome, dude. You preach like, oh, my gosh. Now, maybe I could preach a storm around them, because that's God in me, not me. But it's not about me. I already know who I am. I'm already safe in the ark of God. I'm already secure in who I am, but he or she isn't. So what am I going to do? I want to lift them up to the place where I am in my knowledge of my relationship with Christ and who I am. And that's how Encouraged by Caring works. These girls have seen it happen. It's nothing for me to drop at your feet and begin to kiss your feet. It's nothing for me to drop at your feet and begin to just honor you and worship you. We did this, Beth did a men's meeting. It was an Honor Our Husband's Day. This was back in the early years when we were kind of, our husbands were all Christians, but we had a little more passion than they did, didn't we, honey? At one time. You wouldn't know that now, but at one time. But yeah, Honor Our Men's Day. And you know what? These men came in scared to death because they thought that us women were meeting to talk about them. And in truth, that's what a lot of women's prayer meetings are about, to talk about how bad their life is at home and how awful their husband is. But that never came, you know. We shared a hurt now and then, but that wasn't our focus. Our focus was on, daggone these men, what are they going to leave? There's so much in them! And we begin to focus on that. But this day was all about honoring our men. And Beth said, we're to each one write some special thing that we see in each one of these men. Not just your husband, but every man that was invited. These men were on eggshells. I mean, they were sweating bullets because they really thought, my husband was there, he can tell you, they really thought that we were, that they had done give us, okay, they're there, and we're going to tell them what no good dirty dogs they are, you know? But that's not what happened. Those men begin to have tears in their eyes and be touched as they opened up their little baggie and they begin to read what Dee wrote, Beth wrote, Valerie wrote, Ida wrote, I wrote. And then you know what God had me do? When it came time to honor my husband, he comes up. And you have to understand at the time, and my husband gives me permission to share this because he's not at all ashamed. It's part of his testimony. My husband was an alcoholic, severe alcoholic. I'm glad I didn't know how bad he was at the time. He was bad enough. And he wasn't mean. He wasn't mean. He wasn't hateful. He was a wonderful husband, wonderful father. But he just had another lover, and it was alcohol. Okay? And he was a Christian. He loved God. But he had something that had control over him at the time. But I knelt down at his feet, and I began to repent to him for every time that I had ever degraded him or made him feel less than. And these girls can attest, something broke in those men when I did that. When they saw a woman humbling herself before her husband, prostrating herself at his feet, and declaring that she had failed him, and she had wronged him, and she had hurt him, and he was her everything. And that was part of what I contributed to the change that happened there. But that's part of my central passion. That's part of my divine assignment. Okay, now back to you guys. Go to the next page. This is your five greatest strengths. You're going to do the same thing here. You're going to go down through the list. You're going to circle everything that applies to you. You're going to X out anything that doesn't. You're going to take it down to five words. Then you're going to take it down to two words. Then you're going to take it down to one word. And at the bottom, you're going to write your greatest, your central passion from the other page and your greatest strength here. And this is your two-word divine assignment. This is the core of what you operate from at all times. You might be an intercessor. You might be a minister of the gospel. You might be apostolic in calling. But this is the core of what you're always going to function out of. This is what you will do when all of this ceases to be for you, if it ever does. This is what you will do, okay? I want you to go to the book of Judges. The book of Judges, chapter 6. We're going to go down to verse 11. We're going to talk about Gideon, because Gideon is a prime example of someone who couldn't accept the fact of the nature of God that was in him, the character of God that was in him. And he reminds me a lot of, well, me. See, the thing about me is this, guys. I still, to this day, battle extreme insecurity. I shake in my boots. I hate to do those blurbs up here. See, I was ordained back in 2000 to preach. I was doing a lot of preaching back then in our home church. You know, not this with my current pastor, my spiritual father. You know, I did it all. And then there came a point where when my spiritual father, we had a situation happen. They ended up closing the church. We had a death, and it was God's timing. He had to close some things up. But anyhow, my husband told me, he says, you need to rest. You do too much. He said, I want you to sit down for a while. And the one thing that us girls always do is we honor and respect and obey our men, even when it hurts. And even when we know they're wrong. Michael, do I always submit to you? When I got the call to preach, did I come to you and say, God's called me to preach? What do you think? And what did you say? He said, yes, go. And God honors that. You know, God honors that. It's giving respect to the head over us. I mean, do we not go to Jesus and say, Lord, is that what you want me to do? Is that okay? Well, Christ is the head of the church, like the husband is the head of the wife. You know, I learn a lot about my relationship with Jesus through my relationship with my husband. I have a good example of Jesus as a husband through my husband. He's a tremendous, I will say this to you, he is a much better husband than I am a wife. And I say that with the depths of sincerity in my soul. He is a much better husband than I am a wife. And I learn so much in my relationship with Jesus through him. But anyhow, Gideon. Verse 11. But one day the angel of the Lord came and sat beneath the oak tree at Ophrah on the farm of Joash the Abizrite. Joash's son Gideon had been threshing wheat by hand in the bottom of a grape press, a pit where grapes were pressed to make wine, for he was hiding from the Midianites. See, here's this guy, this son of the living God, afraid of the enemy and hidden in a pit. You ever been hidden in a pit because you're afraid of the enemy? I've been there. Maybe your enemy is public speaking. Maybe you're, as Nancy says, shy and backward, which is the root of that is pride. But maybe that's what your fear is. Maybe that's the pit you're hiding in. Maybe you're afraid there and you're hiding in. But here comes the angel of the Lord. And he appeared to Gideon and said, mighty soldier, the Lord is with you. Now get this. He's hunkered down in a pit threshing because he's afraid. He's making it look like he's busy doing good work. Oh, we need to thresh. We need to do this. We need to, this needs to be to bless God. This is my work I've been given to. Not that it doesn't need to be done, but it was his time to step forth. And God was calling him out by sending the angel of the Lord to speak forth what was truly in him. Okay? There's greatness in each and every one of us here. You may say, oh, there's not greatness in me. I'm a more mature woman. My time may be over. Honey, your time is never over till you draw your last breath. There's greatness in you still waiting to come out in greater measure than what it already has. It's come out in great measure, but there's greater measure to come out in you because you have a wisdom that none of the rest of us have had because of the years you've walked and the things that you've walked through that you can share with us that will give us strength for the journey. Your time is never completed till you draw your last breath. And then sometimes you get a second appearance like Lazarus. You die like Nancy and God brings you back because he just ain't done. They're going to be act two. You see what I'm saying? But there he is. There's Gideon. Stranger, Gideon replied. Stranger. He was so far in the pit, he didn't even recognize that it was the angel of the Lord. Fear will not only cause you to hide from people, fear will cause you to hide from God, and you don't even realize you're hiding from him. Because when God's trying to reveal to you who you are, and you're going, oh no, that's not me, 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 you're stepping away from him. Because you're either in agreement with God or you're against God. You're either going toward the promises of God or you're stepping away from God, not just his promises. You are literally stepping away from a closer relationship with the Most High God because of fear. And there Gideon was. Stranger, Gideon replied, if the Lord is with us, why has all this happened to us? And where are all the miracles our ancestors have told us about, such as when God brought them out of Egypt? Now the Lord has thrown us away and has let the Midianites completely ruin us. See, he was saying, God, there's the promises. You did it for this one, this one, this one, but you just threw us away. What's wrong with our generation? We read of the revivalists of the past, and we see the great miracles that were performed in Finney's and Wigglesworth and Catherine Coleman, and we think, oh, the Toronto blessing in Brownsville. Why not here in Grovetown, Ohio? Well, okay, wherever Grovetown, Ohio is, Lord, I bless them in the name of Jesus. Grovetown, Georgia. Why not here? Why not here? Is it coming here, Lorraine? Is it coming here? Is Grovetown, Georgia going to see the miraculous? Is Grovetown, Georgia in the midst of the revival? Is all the promises of God coming to pass for Grovetown, Georgia? Why? I'll tell you why it happens. It's this. Stranger, Gideon replied. Well, let's go to verse 14. The Lord turned to him and said, I will make you strong. You go and save Israel from the Midianites. I am sending you. We cry out for revival. We cry out for revival. We cry out for revival. We say, God, send Nancy. We'll give her money. Just send her. You don't want Nancy. Nancy's sent here to you. Nancy's sent to our hometown, to us, to prepare us to go bring in the harvest. She's building you and me up to do the work of the ministry. She's Apostle Paulina. That's what God told me. Because when I read Paul, a lot of times his writings, I will hear just as plain as day Nancy speaking. I will hear Nancy's voice speaking those words. And the Lord said, she's Apostle Paulina to you. She's my Apostle Paulina. I read Paul's writings and I see Nancy. I listen to her talk and I hear Paul. But the purpose is to build us up for the work of the ministry. That's why you're being sent, Nancy. That's why you're being sent. You're a voice crying in the wilderness, prepare ye the way of the Lord. Because you're not afraid to step out and say the hard things. You're not afraid to step out and give testimony to not only your uprisings, but your downfallings. You're not afraid to go where God tells you to go and do what God says. And that doesn't mean she doesn't wallow in her prayer room and go, oh, God, oh, God, oh, God. We all do that sometimes. Because fear tries to stop us. Fear is a tool sent by the devil to paralyze us, to separate us from our God and our destiny. Because the devil knows his time is short, and he knows that as each and every one of us find out who we are and our divine purpose and step into that anointing that's already in us and waiting for us to walk in, he knows he's out of the region. So he goes, boo, you can't do that. Oh, who do you think you are, little lady? You better get back in the spot. Oh, don't you remember? Boy, if you get up there and you begin to share, you begin to teach, you begin to preach, you begin to pray, you begin to prophesy, I'm going to send some little demon-possessed person, and they're going to begin to read the riot act of all the things you did in secret, because I've seen some of the things you did in secret. Have you ever had a voice like that come to you? I have. What do you do? Oh, no, you go, in Jesus' name, my sins are covered by the blood of Jesus. God will not make us ashamed. We saw it today in the word that Nancy brought out. Good heavens. God, that used to scare me. I thought, Lord, Lord, what if the devil sends someone and they begin telling all the times I blah, 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 blah. My sins are covered. That lady don't live no more. She died 2,000 years ago on the cross of Calvary. And there is a mighty woman of valor that Jesus Christ raised up in this vessel that belongs to him. It's not me. Can the water pipe say, boy, aren't I great? I provided you water. No, all the water pipe does is sit there and collect dust till it's connected to the source and the source flows through it. So who waters the garden? The water does, but what does the water need to get to where the garden exists? The conduit. It's a partnership. We're co-laborers with God. Jesus Christ is dressed and ready to come, and he's saying, I'm waiting on you guys. I'm ready to come. I'm ready to come over the world victorious. I'm ready to come. I'm excited. I want to bring you all home. I want to wrap this thing up because I want us to continue on in our journey in eternity. Come on. Come on, church. Come on, bride. Finish your preparations. But we got to get up and we got to do something. But Mr. Megorium, out of Mr. Megorium's Wonder Emporium, he made this statement that I love. He said, your life is an occasion. Rise to it. You are here for such a time as this. You are not an accident. You are not an accident. You are on purpose here. You are on purpose connected with this ministry. Nancy is not any greater than you and I in the eyes of God. But she is one who is sold out and obedient, where many of us stand back and go, oh, Lord, not me. That's, oh, God, not me. Let God show you who you are. You see, when you know who you truly are, you don't walk in self-righteousness and pride and go, well, bless God, aren't I something wonderful? People who do that don't know who they are. They're insecure. That's insecurity you hear talking. When you hear a proud person talking about, that's insecure people. Little kids trying to play dress up. Talk big, but they don't believe it. People who know who they are have no problem bowing at the feet of another and kissing their feet. And letting the other get all the accolades. Because we know who we are. And our glory, our honor, our praise comes from our Father as he says, well done, daughter. Thank you. Thank you for being a vessel for me. I appreciate that. It's all about him. We take no honor, no glory for ourselves. But see, Satan twists the truth. He twists the truth and he says, oh, if you in the least little bit get yourself in there, oh, it's pride. No, it's not. When your purpose is to show the greatness of our God. I want you to look at me and go, wow. Because when you look at me and go, wow, God's going to turn the light on you and go, wow. And you're going to go, wow, because you're going to look at God. You see what I'm saying? Again, it goes back to that word balance. But see, this is all about relationship. When your eyes and your heart are set on Christ, we may sometimes temporarily make a misstep. I've made some missteps, even in this ministry, and Nancy's had to bring correction to me. I just received it. I'm learning a lot. She can teach me things. She's my mentor for this time. She's the mentor God told me was coming back in the 90s that I've been waiting for a long time. She's the one. Now, there'll be other mentors, and there's been others, but she's the one. And she's mentoring me to carry on the work of the ministry that she does. Not that I will ever walk as Nancy Haney, not that I will necessarily be over a big ministry, but what I'm saying is what she does, she produces hope, and she calls forth the destiny in people because she sees them. That's exactly what you and I are to be about. See, they're not going to come to these meetings. They're not going to come to these meetings. We're going to go to their meetings. If it's in the grocery store, yeah. If it's in the office, yeah. If it's in the sidewalk, yeah. I ran into a man in Walmart who had just lost his wife. My son used to work in a mall, and he was a security guard, and he would stop by and talk to my son, and I would be there a lot because my son was only 14, and I kind of was his covering, so he would be allowed to work in this little kiosk thingy. And we began to run into him and his wife every once in a while in town, and we would stop and chat like old friends. His wife had passed away, and he's still a fairly young man, just probably 58, 59, 60. And I saw him, and we began to talk, and he didn't say this, but he was struggling with the idea that he needed to move on because his wife is gone. And even though he loved her dearly and still loves her, he doesn't want to live the rest of his life alone. He was looking for permission to live. And you know what I did? I gave him permission to live. I have that authority because of Christ Jesus in me, because Christ gives him permission to live. And all I did was pass on the message. But I didn't pass on the message with some holy, thus saith the Lord, let me quote scriptures. I just went up to him and I just said, you know, Mark, Debbie would, you know, she would want you to move on. You're doing a good thing. That's a great move that you're making. That's wonderful. And then before he left, I gave him a big hug. And as I hugged him, I prayed, Lord, help him. I prayed out loud in his ear. I prayed, Lord, help him find the place, Lord. Help him find the place, Lord. Bring the right woman into his life. And then I kissed him on the cheek. And when I pulled back, tears. And he looked at me and just held my hand as he walked away. Well, honey, I have church all the time. You know what? I never wanted to get back behind a pulpit again. I never wanted to ever do this again. I did this, and when I realized that my greatest effectiveness was the one-on-one, I've never wanted to do this again. It's not something I said, oh, I want to do that. No, I've been there, done that. I want people to feel loved and appreciated and special, and I want them to know that God has so much more for them, and that they can be all that God has created them to be. But you know what? He's added a joint to the pipeline. I've been faithful to do the little, the one in the grocery store. The one, you know, something that he has me do quite often? I'll be sitting eating, and I'll see a young lady sitting over there, and she might be a little overweight or something, but I just see beauty in her face, and I'm like, and I have to get up and go tell her, honey, I hate to interrupt you, but you are beautiful. You have such a glow about you. You are beautiful. And the boyfriend or the husband may be sitting right across from her. And you know what? He's probably never thought to tell her that. But she's crying out deep inside, somebody notice me. I may be a little overweight, but I'm beautiful. I'm worth something. I have value. And the Jesus in me went to meet her need. Because I know, and I don't hesitate about that anymore, because I know that's my divine assignment. I'm into encourage by caring no matter where that comes to. That's what I do. And that's what this will do for you. All of a sudden, you'll know, and I want to share with, hers is to illuminate wisdom. Dee speaks and my mouth drops open. And sometimes I have to stop and think what she's just said, because she speaks with such depth. But it's totally natural with her because it's the wisdom of God that's within her. She's a revealer and illuminator of the wisdom of God. I'm an illuminator of the heart of God. She illuminates wisdom. Now this one over here, she nourishes catalysis. Catalysis has changed. She's the bossy little sister. She is. She's the bossy little sister. Well, bless God. What are you doing that for there, Michael? You need to come be here. Come on, I want you to come. And you know what Michael does? He tucks his little tail between his legs and goes, okay, little sissy, I'm coming. Because she loves him. Little sisters love their big brothers and sisters. Look up to them. And they just want big brother and big sister to be happy. But she doesn't love. She, don't ever tell her anything that you know that God's calling you into, because she will not let go till you walk in it. She is a bulldog in the spirit. This is my description of her. She's a drill sergeant with a bulldog mentality. That's my pastor and best friend. She, and that is serious. Is that not right, Dee? God, the only way I would ever get this woman to leave me alone is to move to the other side of the country, and she would gain frequent flyer miles getting there to get me to get back into my destiny. And I say that sincerely. But none of this is none of this is dependent upon this. This is just a pipeline. But when you're faithful in little, God makes you ruler of much. Nancy has shared with her testimony how that she was just faithful in little. Now God has her worldwide. But that's for you too, Carol. That's for you too. I was sharing with Carol. The Carol that you see today is not the Carol I first met. The Carol I first met was kind of a whipped pup, weren't you? Yeah, definitely. She walked around like this, trying to figure out what the heck she was doing here, singing there. But you know what? People rallied around her and began to just call forth what we saw in her. And it's like I told her today, she just walks around, and I said, do you not realize that wherever you walk, you are weaving a web of light? Because you're an atmosphere changer. When people get up near you, they can't help but smile because you just stay lit up all the time. Now look at her. And do you see what happens when I do that? You see her begin to glow? Iron sharpens iron. Iron sharpens iron. And you know what? Let me tell you something about this little encourager. Sometimes I need someone to encourage me. During ministry the other night, or last night, we were, Lorraine and I and Carol, thank you, were there. We're ministering over this one lady. And I just bust out in song. Now, I don't have a singing voice. But I know that when I'm to sing, I just sing the little song. Just quietly sing the little song. And she said to me, she says, oh my gosh, when you started singing, I knew that was God. I said, yeah? She said, yeah, you don't understand. This lady, I know her. And when she was little, her Nana used to sing to her lullabies. And that just wrapped peace around her. And I'm like, I really thank you for telling me that. Because sometimes I do some things and I think, oh, God, I really just hope this is you. Because I'm not all together. I need what you supply. I need what's in you to come out. I need you to touch me with your wisdom and your insight. I need you to tell me that you love me and that you see that what I say makes a difference in your life. It's what every joint supplies. Please, for your sake, take time to go do the worksheet that I just gave you. For your sake. It's like I tell people different times when I counsel with people. I share with them whatever tidbit of advice that I might see as a person or maybe something that God gives me, and I tell them this. I say, you can do all that I've said. You can do part that I've said. You can do none that I said. Because it doesn't affect me. I'm going to walk out here and have a wonderful, happy life. You're the one who's still living in the pit of despair. And you're not living in despair, but you know what I'm saying? I can say no real easy to people because that's not part of my divine assignment. You know? It's not that I'm too good to do anything. I'm not too good to do anything. Let me tell you something else, how this divine assignment works in me. It's very practical, too. You know when I go in the bathroom? If there's a seat that has somebody else's doo-doo on it, do you know what I do? Yeah, I get my little wet wipes out and clean up because you know what I think about the next person or my little grandson, or my handicapped mama. And you know something that the Lord told me? He said, when you're walking through the store, if you see something falling off of a shelf or a, you know, pick it up. He said, treat it as if you own it because you do. He told me, they said, treat this world as if you own it because you do. It's part of your inheritance. You see what I'm saying? He changes us. He changes us. Okay. There was, as always, there's always a lot more there that we're not going to get to. Dee, did you pass out these two? Okay, pass out that. And I actually have the book, Robin Chaddock's book. I brought, I've got 11 of them left, with the full worksheets in here that takes you through the entirety of the book. I would encourage you that if this has really pricked you, like you're like, ooh, I really need to do this, that you raise your hand for one of these books and go through all of this. It is liberating. She's an easy read. She's a wonderful lady.